Do you ever notice how long it takes Reverend Elaine to get ready? We're here in her place, so we're taking her time. Well, to be invited to speak in this historic place, 176 years serving this community, for Vicki and me, this is a very real privilege. Of course, we're a little nervous. We aren't nervous about speaking in front of you because as we look down at the audience, we see nothing but smiling, friendly faces. No, I think we're nervous because we want to do a good job in the absence of our leader, Reverend Elaine, who has dubbed this to be Leadership Month. Are we leaders enough to do justice to speaking at a worship service in this place? I pray that we are. I hope that you'll forgive us, though, if we fall short of the high standards that you're used to receiving in the weekly messages. This church and its leadership gives its members and adherents many opportunities to participate. Certainly, if you have a desire to be involved in any way in this church, you're welcomed to get involved here. Karen and I are fairly new in attending First Baptist Simcoe, but many worship features attracted us, from the greeters at the door, Walmart's after Jay, to Diane and the band, Jim and the choir, and of course, Reverend Elaine. There are so many forms of leadership that we're here providing for the community. I especially enjoy seeing the children's stories. With great respect to the sermonizers, sometimes the children's story is the best part. There's always a good moral, and you really never know what's going to happen. The children are always fun. It gives me the opportunity to say thank you to the many parents who bring their children to this church. You are family leaders for bringing your children here so that we can all share in the joy of your children. And of course, they will be the congregational leaders of the future. Did you see how many young people were on this stage last Sunday for Sunday school graduation? That you bring your children here is no small gift to First Baptist Simcoe. Do you know that many churches today have no children in attendance? And that means no Sunday school, and I'm sure some of those churches are right here in Simcoe. This past year, it was my privilege to share in teaching the grades 6, 7, and 8 Sunday school class. I was even invited to participate in the Mother's Day musical. Did you recognize me? Playing Jesus was a real responsibility, let me tell you. But I've learned a lot from these young people, and their energy has helped keep me young in spirit. Almost a year ago, Reverend Elaine established two groups within the church, 17 people committed to meeting monthly to study the topic of leadership. Today, Vicki and I take a turn, but others from the two groups will appear in the future. Sue, I think you're next, right? Excellent. First, I must say on behalf of all those who were invited to join these lead groups that we're not the only ones in the congregation capable or qualified to study leadership. This church, as I said earlier, is filled with leaders. In fact, just about everyone who attends here is leading the way in some way. You're leaders in the Christian community just by your regular attendance at this church. You lead by your presence. Think about it. If there was no congregation, there would be no church. So many of you offer your time and your talents to the betterment of this church and the wider community of Simcoe and indeed the world. And that involvement is appreciated. I encourage you to continue serving in these ways. That being said, each of us in the two lead groups was given several responsibilities. Yes, there was homework. We committed to purchase and read several books, and we developed presentations to be made within the groups. Apart from the monthly meetings, we participated in overnight retreats at the Five Oaks Retreat Center near Paris, Ontario. Some of us became mentors to others, and some were mentees to other mentors. One-on-one relationships were created that will last our lifetimes. Each of us in our group, called Lead 201, I'm not sure why, but there already was a Highway 401. These were presented with various aspects of leadership, and we were asked to study an area of leadership that we ourselves wanted to learn more about. So my area of interest was servant leadership. First of all, the Bible offers many verses, many chapters on leadership. And the highest example of what it is to be both a leader and a servant, of course, is Jesus Christ. And in Paul's letter to the Romans, Romans 12, which we read earlier, it says it all on how to live a Christian life and on being a servant leader. In John 13, Jesus is depicted as a servant leader at the Last Supper. So he rose from the table, took off his outer garment, and tied a towel around his waist. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Are you going to wash my feet, Lord?" Jesus answered him, "You do not understand now what I'm doing, but you will understand later." Peter declared, "Never at any time will you wash my feet." "If I do not wash your feet," Jesus answered, "you will no longer be my disciple." Simon Peter replied, "Lord, do not wash only my feet then. Wash my hands and my head too." Now we know that there are many types of leaders with many different motivations. History has shown us the dictators, the despots, the ego-driven, materialistic types. But what is servant leadership? Books have been written on this subject. Here's one by Robert K. Greenleaf, who coined the phrase in this book, which he wrote in 1977. And Butler University in Indianapolis offers courses of study on this subject, so it is not a new concept. Greenleaf says in this book that the servant leader is servant first. It begins with the natural feeling that one wants to serve. The servant leader is sharply different from the person who is a leader first, perhaps because of the need to express an unusual ego drive for power or to acquire material wealth or fame. The servant-first leader's priority is to make sure that the other person's needs are being served. The test is, do those being served grow as persons? Do they become healthier, wiser, freer, more autonomous, more likely themselves to become servants? What is the effect on the least privileged in society? Will they benefit or at least not be further deprived? Greenleaf says that caring for people, the more able and the less able serving each other, is the rock upon which a good society is built. The author, Jerry McGregor, says the point of service is to love others tangibly. Serving allows you to actually imitate Christ, which is the goal of the Christian faith. Now, we have many examples of this type of leadership here at First Baptist. When we prepare and provide the First Baptist the first serving meals each month. When we participate in community events such as We Believe in Simcoe Day. When we support the mission work in South American and Caribbean countries. Servant leadership is exercising real godly leadership as Christ did when he used the towel. He influenced, equipped, and empowered his disciples to accomplish God's purpose and plan. It is serving others unselfishly while influencing them in Christ-directed, purposeful direction. Servant leaders are not about self-pride, boasting, self-absorption, self-protection, or self-interests. There is no room for the self in a servant leader. Servant leaders give priority to others and value their opinions. They do not compare or criticize others. They're never concerned about serving their own interests. A servant leader wants first to be a good leader, is an agent for change, empowers people, and leads from an authentic spiritual base, and is a leader for Christ, and must put off personal agendas and adapt to his will and ways. The philosopher John Ortberg says, "The primary reason Jesus calls us to servanthood is not because other people need the service. It is because of what happens to us when we serve." Now, when I peel potatoes for the first serving meals, I do feel more like a Christian. Putting on that meal every month really helps me. Now, before I turn it over to Vicki, I'd like to add that I wasn't sure of my purpose or contributions when I was asked to join the Lead 201 group. But what I have learned from the others and from this experience is not only how to be a better leader, perhaps, but how to be a better follower. Leaders need people who are willing to follow. And I've been helped by my mentor and others in defining God and the workings of Jesus Christ, who I want to follow. When I speak here today, please do not assume that I have all the answers, for I have much yet to learn. It's one thing to study these topics, and quite another to absorb them into one's daily life and routines. All I can hope for is that I will get better at it.
I just want us for a moment to focus on the bread at the communion table. It's a basic staple food in most countries around the world. To the neediest in our world, it's a promise that one more day of life can be sustained. In families and in our community, it's a symbol of being together when we invite others to come to the table and to break bread with us. In the Bible, Jesus was referred to as the bread of life. He was chosen by God. He was blessed, he was broken, and he was given for us. So what does it mean that we call Jesus the bread of life? I wanted to invite you for a few minutes to kind of reflect on that and perhaps share out loud some of the words or the images that come to mind. So when I say Jesus is the bread of life, what are some words or images that come to mind? Sustainer. Pardon? Nourishment. Hope. Strength. Sharing. Peace. Healing. Filling. Spiritual food. When I look at the symbol of bread, it's a reminder to me that our ultimate significance is found in living a life for others. Because Jesus is the bread of life, we too, as Christ's body, are called to go out and to be all that it represents. Now I realize with what comes next that I might be jumping a bit away from this idea, but I promise to come back to it. Jesus is also referred to as God incarnate. It's a very big word and a very big concept, but at its core, what it means is that Jesus is God with flesh on. It's the idea of God taking on human form. So that's the what of incarnation. But why did God do this? Through the person of Jesus, God entered into the world, fully experiencing all that it means to be human. Through Jesus, God comes to live among us, to express his love, to identify with our sufferings, our pain, and our struggles, and also to encourage us and to sustain us. So why do I bring up the idea of incarnation, and what does it have to do with being a servant? Jesus was sent to embody God here on earth. As followers of Christ, we are also called to embody Jesus here on earth. We are Jesus with flesh on. And we're called to be his hands and feet. In John 20, verse 21, Jesus reminds us of this when he says, "As the Father has sent me, I am sending you." So what does it look like to be Jesus with flesh on? I'd like to read a passage for you found in Philippians chapter 2. Is there any encouragement from belonging to Christ? Any comfort from his love? Any fellowship together in the Spirit? Are your hearts tender and compassionate? Then make me truly happy by agreeing wholeheartedly with each other, loving one another and working together with one mind and purpose. Don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. Don't look out only for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. You must have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. Though he was God, he did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. When he appeared in human form, he humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on a cross. Summarized in my own words is, if you want to be a follower of Christ, if you are a follower of Christ, you have to be, and you want to be a somebody, then you're called to be a nobody, a servant to others, a slave. Amid the self-centeredness that seems to be our culture, we can make sense of this attitude of servanthood because of this one truth. We are blessed. Our blessedness is not just a feeling, but it's a truth that shapes us. When we are deeply aware of this, we can't help but want to go out and bless others around us. Mother Teresa once had this to say about herself. "I am a little pencil in the hand of a writing God who is writing a love letter to the world." She recognized that God takes, blesses, and uses even the simplest actions from the most ordinary people and transforms them into something extraordinary. She loved and ministered out of who she was and not out of what she had. Mother Teresa wanted nothing so that Christ could be everything. To give a better understanding of what this meant to her, I'd like to read a prayer to you. This prayer is something that her order, the Sisters of Charity, read each and every morning. "Jesus, help me spread your fragrance wherever I am. Fill my heart with your spirit and your life. Penetrate my being and take such hold of me that my life becomes a radiation of your own life. Give your light through me and remain in me in such a way that every soul I come in contact with can feel your presence in me. May people not see me, but see you in me. Remain in me so that I shine with your light, and may others be illuminated by that light. All light will come from you, O Jesus. Not even the smallest ray of light will be mine. You will illuminate others through me. Place on my lips your greatest praise, illuminating others around me. May I preach you with actions more than with words, and with the example of my actions, with the visible light of the love that comes from you to my heart. God is at work, and as Christ's body, we are simply called to go out into the world, called to be servants, participating in what he is already doing. Before I end today, I'd like to share a short story from Ellie McKay. She is someone I've had the privilege of journeying beside this year as we helped to support a refugee family together. She writes, "In October, I was asked to be a lunch helper in my school's grade 2 class. This young boy in grade 2 and his family had just arrived in Canada. When he came into the classroom to meet his classmates for the first time, I noticed how terrified he was. He cried and cried and wouldn't let go of his mom. I realized that even though he was only 7, he had never attended school before. He turned 8 in October, and I surprised him with a card that played music. We've been friends ever since. Then one Sunday in October, I saw an ad at church looking for a homework helper for his older brother and sister, and I decided to help. My mom and I were worried about how to be homework helpers with kids who don't speak much English. We weren't sure how to go about it. We decided to take along an album of our family the first day we went to the library together. That seemed like a good place to start." And later she writes, "For our family, one big challenge was our lack of time. We made the homework club a priority and just made it work. Sometimes I had a lot of homework, but because I had made a commitment to the kids, I made sure I got to the library with them. We really had to be organized. It also meant staying up late to get my homework done. I think the experience with this family made me more confident because I realized that I could make a difference in their lives. The kids were always excited to see us, and we had lots of laughs. The young boy in grade 2 wouldn't make eye contact with me for a long time, but now he seems much less afraid." If we're honest with ourselves, how many of us see a serious need the way Ellie did and simply decide we're too busy to get involved, that the costs far outweigh the benefits to us? I'm not suggesting that God expects us to take on every single crisis that comes our way, but what I am wondering is this: how often do we ignore or fail to see God's invitation to join him because we are afraid of what it will cost us? Jesus' life reminds us of the kinds of lives we are called to lead, the lives of servants. We are being sent just as Jesus is being sent. Our purpose is to be Christ, God's tangible presence in the world. I'd like to return to the table with you one last time. Remember that God is the one who sustains and fills us. God has chosen each of us and calls us to go and make a difference in the world. God is the one who blesses us. When we allow our lives to be given in the service of others, God uses us to sustain those around us who are in need. The question is, are you willing to accept this invitation? Will you follow where he leads?